Yeah, that was a tough L you took.
That was a dude. That was a tough L. Like, honest to God, like I'd almost rather my wife cheat on me than someone like be better at Googling than me, because I can. That's I am like I'd rather put this behind us and never really speak of it again, because
Well, I guess I'll be holding this over you forever then.
it really it hurt. It stung, because I pride myself on my on my Google search ability, but I
It's
guess
like
you know.
high on your resume on where the opening paragraph of strength, Googling, is one of, but you're gonna have to remove that now or put a strike through.
It would it today it would be it would definitely would replace proficient at Excel. I've had proficient at Excel on my resume since 1995. I swear on my children, I do not know how to use any spreadsheet.
Oh,
I've tried.
so not only is it relatively unimpressive these days, but it's a lie.
It's a 1,000% lie. I cannot for the life of me figure out how to use a spreadsheet. I will lie all the time, given the opportunity to make money.
Welcome, one and all, to Low Rollers, the podcast that always hits on soft 17. But enough about the behavior that resulted in us not being allowed within 500 yards of a high school. Heyo! I'm Eric Raskin, joined by Jeff Edelstein. He's the funny one. I'm the other guy. We are writers and editors for Casino Reports, Lottery Geeks, InGame, and Props.com. You know the deal. Subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, go on TikTok and make a video about how much you love us. By the way, Jeff, my ultimate old guy take here.
Yeah.
Millions and millions of hours of content out there on TikTok,
Sure.
and still not a single funny video. Every time someone sends me a TikTok, you have to watch this. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
They are O for infinity on making me laugh. Is that a good old guy take?
It's pretty good old guy thing. Although, I mean, I find it's hard. Anytime you say to somebody, "This is so funny," it automatically like
Right.
lessens how funny it's going to be. I just saw something on TikTok that made me laugh. It was a mashup of the No Kings rallies versus Trump's rally, you know, the parade.
Right.
Set and the background music was the sisters, the four sister bit from Saturday Night Live with what's her name, you know, the Lawrence Welk doing
Oh, okay. I know the
Kristen
skit
Wiig
you're
with the
talking
little
about. Yeah,
hands.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
you know, it goes, "I'm Amy, do do do, I'm Janice," and then it's like, "I'm Janice," you know. I don't know, it's
So
funny.
I'm going to take that clip and release that as a TikTok, and it's going to go viral.
It may. By the way, and to reference the cold, the soft 17 thing, I'm pretty sure the age of consent in both of our states is 16, so I think we're in the clear.
I'm disturbed that you even know that.
Speaking of, well, we're going to be talking more about sex later, as it turns
Ooh,
out.
yeah.
With our interview subject today, the always entertaining, and I say always because we've only talked to him once, and I was
One for one.
fantastically
Yeah.
entertained by the journalist and author Michael Kaplan, who's the author of the newly released book titled Advantage Players. It's a great interview. Stay tuned for that. But before we get to that, Eric, as always, plenty o' news to discuss.
Yep. Prediction markets have been the number one story in our industry this year. But with this week's lead story, the angle on prediction markets may be changing. It's Cauchy versus New Jersey, that we knew. But this week, a whole bunch of amicus briefs were filed by entities joining New Jersey, taking its side in the fight, saying Cauchy should not be allowed to offer sports prediction markets. States' rights should prevail. We had 34 other states, plus Washington, D.C., and something called the Northern Mariana Islands.
Yes, that's correct.
We had a massive coalition of tribes. We had the AGA. We had the Casino Association of New Jersey. We had various anti-gambling groups. So far, all the legal decisions have gone Cauchy's way, and we know Cauchy has strong political connections. But if the tide is going to turn, it would seem an overwhelming collection of parties all pushing in the same direction could be what would cause it to turn. So, what do you think, Jeff? Does this feel like a game-changing moment to you?
I don't know. I like the term amicus brief. Sounds delicious. How was the,
Delicious.
yeah. You know, you're going around the table, I'll have the salmon, I'll have the chicken. How's the amicus brief tonight? It's good. Yeah, no, the amicus brief.
Okay.
Medium.
As long
I
as
don't
we're
know.
talking about that word,
Yeah. I have no idea
Did
what it
you
means.
see the plural written out in certain articles?
No, but let me guess.
AMICI.
Oh, I was going to guess. I
Oh,
was going to guess
well, I was going to
Amicai or
ask for
something
your
like
pronunciation.
that.
AMI. That's what I was. Is it like Amici? Like Don
Amici?
Amici?
It might be.
Am Amici? Amici? Yeah, I
I
wasn't
don't know.
sure, but I read
Not a
it a couple
clue.
times this week.
Not a clue. Not a lawyer. Yeah, so is it going to turn? It's interesting. I saw one tweet. I think it was what's his Andrew Kim. Is that who I'm
That
thinking
sounds
of?
right, yeah.
Is that find me
He's a
another?
legal expert guy, yeah.
Find me somewhere else where red and blue state AGs get together on something. So
Right.
that's fascinating. That kind of the fact that both Democrats and Republicans agree on this kind of sort of interestingly makes me think that like they're on the right legal side of it. You know what I'm saying? Like that,
Right.
you know, that there's that. Interesting that California and Texas did not add themselves to this. I don't understand like why. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's after, you know, numerous skirmishes that have been lost, this feels like a little, you know, skirmish that has won for like the state side just by virtue of them
Even
coming
filing
together,
these briefs, yeah.
you know. So it's gonna end up in front of a court. We know
Right,
that it's gonna
right.
end up in front of the Supreme Court at some point. We know
Right.
that. And honestly, if it ends up in front of the Supreme Court, I suppose they side. I mean, the Supreme Court, clearly, as evidenced by PASPA, is a states' rights and
Well,
Roe v. Wade.
a few members of the court have changed since then.
Okay, but Roe,
I
I
guess
mean,
like two. So,
right,
right.
but Roe
Roe v.
v.
Wade,
That's a
same,
state's, you know.
right.
So this court is definitely on the side of states' rights when it comes to stuff
Okay.
like this. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I
I'm
think
so
it's,
glad I asked you the question so you could
well,
say I don't know 12 times.
but who knows? Nobody
Right,
knows. Anyone who
right.
claims to know is, you know, I don't believe them.
Right. You have to, instead of answering the question, you have to sort of dance around it in ways that, like, I thought Steve Ruddick phrased it well with this has shifted the mood of the conversation, was how he described this. That sounds about right. We don't know where this
Are
is
we sure? Are
heading.
we sure he didn't say shitted the mood? Sorry, Steve.
No, not going there. That, all things considered, he would be fine with that particular typo, I think. But you know, the mood has kind of changed. Whether there'll be actual results here, nobody
There's no way to
knows.
know. There's no
But
way to know.
it feels at least now like the states are on offense and Cauchy has to go on defense a little, whereas previously Cauchy was just marching forward unconcerned up until
Right.
what happened this week, it seems. It's one of those things where I think any one of these groups alone isn't necessarily that strong. Even like all those states together, okay, well, of course the states are going to back New Jersey, but then and if it had been like just the tribes alone, you know, this isn't California here, they don't necessarily make the rules, or if it was the anti-gambling lobby alone or whatever, they cry wolf at everything. But it's all these groups together. It feels like it has to move the needle. Whether it gets results, I don't know. But I'm declaring that the needle has moved.
Okay, needle. That's official, official, official. That's our official low roller stance. The
Yes.
needle has moved. Okay,
All right.
I accept.
Okay. One other story to talk about. We talked prediction markets. Now we have to talk sweeps, right? Those are the rules of weekly gambling podcasting in
That is
2025.
correct.
So the biggest news is that the bill to ban sweepstakes casinos has made it through both chambers in New York. It's headed for the governor's desk, and there doesn't seem to be a coalition of sweeps players ready to march through Manhattan and protest the way fantasy players once did.
That's right.
Meanwhile, the Connecticut governor signed his state's ban, while the Louisiana governor surprisingly vetoed his, but his stated reasoning was they don't need to pass a ban. The state regulator can handle this. So indeed, on Tuesday, the Louisiana Gaming Control Board sent more than 40 cease and desists to offshore and sweeps operators alike. Jeff, your thoughts? Can we get the spreadsheet virgins of the sweepstakes casino community to band together in protest?
They could try. I think they're pretty well screwed. I mean, sweeps definitely looks like it's in some trouble here, right? You know, it's been a kind of a tidal wave of legislators trying to get rid of it. You know, I mean, sweeps is operating under, you know, they're doing what DFS did 10 years ago, trying to, you know, skirt the issue a bit. I think they're the problem is you know the appetite for online casino gaming in this country from the legislative point of view is not strong, you
No.
know, and I think that's that in the end is what's doing them in. You know, if they were just running sports book sweepstakes operation, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Then it may, you know, I maybe they wouldn't have gotten to this point, but I think the casino aspect. I mean, you show a legislator in a legal or non-legal state, look at what's happening here with the
Right.
casino. That's I think that's a needle mover.
Yeah, it is. It's when someone gets up and demos it for the legislators, that seems pretty
Yeah.
effective when you show them the two currencies and the fact that these are clearly casino games.
Right.
It's kind of tough to deny. It's like, you know, it's sort of interesting the way this all progressed, that sweepstakes operators found a loophole, just like DFS, years ago. They came up with a way to offer online casino play that was legal by the letter of the law. So now the legislators are writing new laws and making them illegal. And it
Right.
just, all this stuff, whether you're sweeps, your DFS, your DFS plus, you want to get big, but not too big, right? You want to make money and build an audience, but not get on anyone's radar if you can
Right.
help it. So
Right.
again, back to needles. Very tough needle to thread to get big, but not too big. And it seems they got a little too big sweepstakes.
Yeah. I'd like to suffer from the same problem.
That's actually a perfect segue to something we're going to be talking about with Michael Kaplan. So let's wrap this up here and move along to our conversation with the author of Advantage Players, Michael Kaplan. This week, we are welcoming to the podcast a fellow gambling writer. His latest book, Advantage Players, was just published by Huntington Press. He's also a senior features writer for the New York Post, and he wrote the article, The Baccarat Machine on Kelly Sun, that is being developed into a movie starring Awkwafina. Michael Kaplan, congratulations on the new book, and welcome to Low Rollers.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So full disclosure, I have not read the book, but Jeff has, and so I expect him to have much better questions for
That's
you than I'll
okay. I
have.
appreciate you having me on.
Well, and we'll see if Jeff proves correct my prediction that his qu questions are better than mine, but he definitely knows the book better. I've read his review, so I know the format of the book, sort of telling the stories of various Advantage players, not just in the gambling world, but winners in life as well. I'm curious how you landed on this subject and this approach. What made you decide to write this gambling book that was going to also extend beyond gambling?
Well, it's interesting. I've written an awful lot about the gambling world. I do all the gambling stuff for Cigar Aficionado. I've written gambling stories for Playboy, for the New York Times Magazine, for GQ, for the old Details Magazine, which no longer exists. I've written for a lot of places about this stuff. And originally, it was going to be just a collection of stories on, people who are, gamblers. And then I was thinking about it, and I realized I've also written a lot and had a lot of contact with people outside of the gambling world who are advantage players, sort of in their own right, in their own domains, let's say. And I found that kind of interesting. And I thought it was a little bit, it sort of turned the whole advantage player concept on its head a little bit. And I found that kind of interesting. And I also thought it makes it relatable for people, and it gives people a chance to realize that, you could be an advantage player without having to go into a casino with, 20 grand to put at risk at, blackjack or baccarat or poker or whatever. And everybody can be an advantage player in their life.
So borrowing from Jeff's review, hopefully not borrowing a question he was going to ask you, but he seemed to find the second half of the book about the life advantage players even more compelling than the first half. Writing about them, were you also more engaged in the non-gambler side, or was it more even for you, or
Oh
which
yeah, I
side?
mean, I find that the people not well. What's interesting about the people who are in the non-gambling world, I don't think, like, if you said to them, "Oh, you're an advantage player," I don't think they would even know what that term means. And then if you were to explain it, I think they would see where that fits into their lives and into what they do.
All right, so I've been put on the spot here by Eric promising you that I had really good questions. So I'm gonna start.
I didn't say really good. I just said better than mine.
Well, I'm gonna start with what I think is this, you know, this is something that, you know, you would see on 60 Minutes, you know, like it's a really hard-hitting question. If I'm putting you on the spot and you don't want to answer it, I totally understand.
I can handle it.
Let me check my notes here. Did you see Lexington Steele's penis?
I did not.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I did not get to see it. I met his wife,
Right.
this is a French Canadian woman, very, very sweet. But no, he did not whip it out for me.
All right. So I figured I'd ask. That chapter is one of the few times I've ever read something that I actually like recoiled while reading it, which is
Which
something.
part?
Well, how the mechanics of what happens when he decides to use it
Oh, the
sexually.
second chamber?
The second chamber. Yeah, I had,
I
I
was
mean,
fascinated by that.
yeah.
Okay, like full disclosure, I've not entered the second chamber.
I didn't even know there was a second chamber.
Nor did I. Nor did I until I
Wow.
spoke with
And
him.
I don't know quite what you guys are talking about, but I am sold on this book right now, and I think I'm going to read it.
I'm honestly getting a little sweaty just discussing the idea of the second chamber. Google at your own risk. But yeah, for real, the second half of the book. So, and you had mentioned earlier, you know, like five, you know, 2 seconds ago, how this kind of dawned on you while you were putting this book together. I have to, I love that when that happens to me. When I, you know, I've been, you know, when I'm writing something and something just kind of like falls into place that I had no idea that this was about to fall into place with. So when you start, so I know like you had written, you know, a lot of this is collected stories that you kind of went back and touched up. Did you have to do a lot of touching up with the,
Yes, there was a
yeah.
lot of touching up, a lot of writing. Some, like the Don Johnson story, was written specifically for the book, the Heidi Fleiss piece. I mean, some of it, I interviewed her for the New York Post. That's how I met her.
Right.
But a lot of that is original for the book. And, you know, the Safdie brothers, that piece was a lot of that was, I mean, I interviewed them when the movie Good Time came out. I wrote about them for the Post. And a lot of the Safdie brothers stuff was written originally for the book. So yeah, and all those long introductions that kind of set the chapters up. And I, you know, it's one of these things like where honestly, it began. It was going to. It's my fifth. I've written four books. It's my fifth book, and it was originally just going to be. Oh yeah, you know, how about doing a collection of articles you've written about gamblers? I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty easy. And the more I thought about it, I was like, well, let's do something more interesting than that. Then I came up with the idea of doing these sort of introductions. And then it was like, why are we just, you know, keeping it to gamblers? There are so many people, you know, in the world who are these advantage players. And
Right.
it kind of made sense to do that. But yeah, there was a lot of additional writing, 100%.
One of my favorite parts of the book was in that Heidi Fleiss chapter where I think it was on the same page where you report that Charlie Sheen hired a bunch of Heidi Fleiss's girls for the Dodge, you know, against the Dodgers. Fleiss thinking that the Red Legs, this is my writing now, that the Red Legs would have dead legs, bet 30 grand and lost. And then like two paragraphs later, the scene, which is, I want to see this committed to film. Jack Nicholson knocking on Heidi Fleiss's door saying they're on to you, kid. I mean, that is tremendous, tremendous stuff. Not a question there. Here's a question though. You've met all these advantage players, you've met all these people outside of gambling who, you know, we can qualify clearly as advantage players. You must have an abiding love for this type of person, right?
I really like people who figure out how to do things and come up with ideas that other people haven't thought about. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, like hanging out with APs in the gambling world is obviously interesting, and writing about APs outside of gambling is interesting too, because it's like you're not really writing about. I mean, when these things were originally done, it wasn't really in that context. I mean, the gambling people, it was kind of in that. You know, you interview John Chang, you know, the one of the founders of the MIT blackjack team. I mean, you know, you're talking to an advantage player. And, you know, even though you're not saying, oh, you're an advantage player, I mean, it's obvious that this guy is an AP. But like when you're talking to, I don't know, Stefan Simkowitz, this guy who figured out a new way to sell art, you know, to do art dealing, I didn't go in there like, oh, this guy's an advantage player. But it was interesting. He was really interested in people who win at casino games. That kind of fascinated him. And I know why, because it's kind of what he does. Like he
Right.
finds his edge just like professional gamblers do. He was super interested in that.
You also write about yourself and your battle with cancer and how you got a diagnosis and you weren't happy with the plan, and so you used I mean, in the book, it sounds like you used the skills that like you learned along the way to find a you know to advantage play cancer.
I
Do
found a
you
better game.
found a better game? Do you think that without your background, you know, knowing these people, that you would have even had the balls to do what you did?
I think it was a combination of being a journalist and the like that sort of advantage player mindset. There was like there was one thing that like that really like when I called, I mean, it's a little bit involved, but like, I called to get an appointment with a particular doctor and they basically said, yeah, he's not available. He's not going to be available till, I don't know, like for 6 or 8 weeks. And I needed to get it done right away because I had another doctor that was like ordering chemotherapy medicine for me. So if I couldn't go back to him and say, look, I've got another solution, he would have said, well, you can't spend weeks trying to find something. We got to get going. And I remembered I was doing a story once with a guy on a hole carding team. And the woman, you know what hole carding is, right? Yeah. So there's a guy on a hole carding team and they were playing Ultimate Texas Hold'em and the dealer was giving up cards. Then all of a sudden she turned away, She just turned, like naturally repositioned herself. And then she all of a sudden wasn't giving up the cards. And he looked at her and he said, oh, I really like your earrings. And she goes, oh, you do? Then all of a sudden she was back in position and giving up the hole card again. So when this woman said that she couldn't, that I couldn't get the appointment, and I said to her, look, this doctor, he likes attention, he has his own lab, he raises money. Okay, she goes, because we get CEOs from companies calling and asking for appointments. And I said, well, look, I could do something no CEO could do. I've written for GQ, I work for the New York Post, I've written for the New York Times. Maybe I'll write about him. Like to me, that was the same thing as that guy. Like I changed the playing field by saying that, and it became a different conversation. And I don't know. I that really did feel like an advantage play when I did that.
For sure. I got one more question for you, then I'm going to throw it back to Eric. You've been covering gambling for decades and advantage players in particular, you know, with all these stories. Do you think, going back to the casino world, that it's easier slash harder slash the same to be able to pull this stuff off in today's climate?
I think a little bit harder because I think casinos are pretty sharp to what's going on. Like that definitely makes it harder. I mean, there's technology to pick people off. I think the casinos are pretty savvy to what's happening. I mean, there are, my understanding, I could be completely wrong, but I think, there are decks that basically, card count and keep track of everything, keep track of what the person did. I think it's harder in that regard, but it's easier. And then I still think new casinos are opening all over the place. And when online casinos open up, like there are, there are these, promotions that could be advantage played. So I think it's a combination of both, in my opinion, like for different reasons.
Right.
So you have a passion for covering gambling as a journalist. You have a passion for these people who gamble. Do you yourself have a passion for engaging in gambling?
Yeah, I played on a card counting team for a couple of years, and that was a great experience. I mean, I got a call from a guy named Rick Blaine who had written a book called Blackjack Blueprint. And he called me and he said, oh, would you review my book? And I was like, well, I don't really do book reviews. And he said, well, how about if I teach you how to card count using the technique in my book? The technique was basically the book was more than just how to card count, but the technique in his book was the high-low system, which is a pretty standard card counting technique. And I would go to his house in Hoboken every week and he would give me lessons and practice at home. And I got good enough at it that he was starting a team that had a lot of money, that had, backers, and you'd fly into Vegas, get 50 grand to go play with. And I tried out for the team and I made the team. I mean, he and I had a little mini bank whenever I'd go somewhere I would play. So he knew I knew what I was doing more or less. And I tried out, I made the team, and I got to play on a card counting team for a couple of years. And that was great. There's a guy named James Grosjean who's in the book. He's like a top AP. I BP'd for him on a play, and that was great. I played with some people. We were doing the cutting play, where you see the bottom card, then somebody cuts to a card, then you drive it either to a player or a dealer based on what the card is. I played on a team doing that. So yeah, I mean, I've gotten to do it. I mean, it's great. I mean, it's not a license to print money. I mean, unless you're playing with Grosjean is a little bit of a license to print money, but the other stuff is really not. But it's cool to be in a casino and know that you understand something that maybe a lot of the other people at the table don't understand. I mean, that's a pretty powerful feeling.
But so these are all advantage playing opportunities that you referenced. Are you someone who won't gamble if you don't have an edge, or will you go sidle up to the craps table with the same odds as everyone else sometimes and see if you might lose a couple hundred bucks or win a couple hundred bucks?
Very limited interest in that. Even
Okay.
before I joined that card, I mean, I'd written a lot about gambling. By the time I got involved in the card counting team, I sort of been writing the stuff for Cigar Aficionado for like 8 years. I'd written a few random gambling stories before then. And the idea of just sitting down and playing random blackjack and not knowing what the hell I was doing was kind of unappealing to me. Just, I don't know. I don't have that random gambling gene that some people have. Like I like to kind of know. To me, it's not even so much winning or losing. It's just interesting to know what's going on. It's a lot more interesting than just sitting there and kind of hoping for the best. And if I play craps, I mean, I'm the most boring guy to play craps with because I'll make a pass line bet, then I'll take odds, which is boring. I mean, that does not make craps. I'm not like splashing chips all over the table, making one terrible bet after the other. I just don't have it in me. I think I know too much about how the sausage gets made. When I interviewed Steve Wynn once, and I was with him in Macau in his office, and I saw him watching the results coming in from Las Vegas, how much money they had made, and he was like laughing out loud. He was so happy. And I was like, wow. Now that's what happens when people find out how much money people lose in casinos. That's what happens when casino owners find out how much money their customers lost in the casinos. Rightfully so. I mean, they're putting up the game. They spent a lot of money to build the place. They're paying, the electricity and all those beautiful chandeliers. They're paying for dealers. They have a right to make money. So I'm not knocking it, but I was like, okay, that was interesting.
Well, one more quick question for you before you go. I don't know if you're allowed to say, but hopefully you are. Where do things stand with the Baccarat Machine movie? I know it's been in the works a while, and
Yeah,
I
it's in the
also know.
works. It was recently reoptioned, and it looks like, I mean, their plan is to get it made. I my fingers crossed. Now that's something that's an advantage play I cannot control. So, I mean, I'm hoping. I mean, it's nice. I'm glad they reoptioned it, and I think it's if I was a betting man, I would bet that it will get made.
Okay, excellent. Well, good luck with that. Hope that happens. Good luck with the book. Congratulations again on it. And thanks for joining us on the podcast,
Thank you
Michael.
very much, guys. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate your having me on.
Our thanks again to Michael. You can find his new book, Advantage Players, at Amazon.com, of course, and also at LasVegasAdvisor.com/shop, where you can also find The Moneymaker Effect, I may as well mention.
Yeah, no, of course. Written by Eric Raskin.
Yes, that
The
is
Eric
correct.
Raskin.
The Eric Raskin.
Yes.
So, Jeff, you always end the show with one of your sports reporters style parting shots.
I think more. I feel more like Andy Rooney. I'd rather get the Andy Rooney
Okay, all right.
accent.
And what did he have a name for it? They call it parting shots on sport. Is
I
there
don't
a
think so. I think it's just,
whatever?
they just said
Just
let's throw
let's
it
go
over
to
to
Andy.
the old angry guy.
Right. All right. Well, whatever you call it, I'm stealing a little of your thunder this week,
Okay.
or maybe I'm just serving as an opening act for you, with a little commentary of my own. The Poker Hall of Fame is way too exclusive. Throughout the 2010s, two people were inducted every year. Okay, fine. Starting in 2020 and every year since, and I'm not sure why they made this change, it's been just one a year. This year's list of 10 finalists just came out, and everyone on it could be a worthy Hall of Famer, not to mention countless people who couldn't make the final 10, who probably should be under consideration. There's a huge backlog now because they only let in one person each year. And I get erring on the side of being difficult to get into. Once the Basketball Hall of Fame lets in a Mitch Richmond or the Boxing Hall of Fame lets in a Ray Mancini, there's no going back. There's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube or the genie back in the bottle, to answer a question we brought up several episodes about what the other one was. But this system the Poker Hall of Fame uses is no good. First off, only the living Hall of Famers vote, which can turn it into an old boys club, just a bunch of friends inducting their friends in perpetuity. That needs to change. But also, one person each year is just ridiculous. It should be at least two poker players, and then maybe every odd numbered year, you also include someone recognized for their contributions to the game as a non-player. So a Matt Savage or an Issei Sheinberg can finally get in. That's the fix. Change it after this year, Poker Hall of Fame. You're welcome.
Boom Boom Mancini, he's not a, he's
He
not,
is in the Hall of Fame,
you
but
don't consider him to be Hall of Fame material?
fame, sure. His resume is pretty thin as
Okay.
far as
I liked him. I
sure.
remember I watched that fight live on Wild World of Sports where he
The
killed the
Duke
guy.
Koo-Kim fight. Yeah.
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Eric. Despite the title of this podcast, it's becoming increasingly possible that I'm not actually a low roller. Another day for me, another semi-ban from a New Jersey sportsbook casino. I don't want to name names, but this one does rhyme with large sock. Apparently, they grew tired of me taking them up on their once in a blue moon deposit bonus deals. From the email sent directly to me, thank you for rolling with large sock bet. During a recent review of your large sock bet account activity, it has been determined that you will no longer be eligible for future promotions, including but not limited to bonus bets, cashback offers, and enhanced winnings. Welp, large sock, thanks for nothing. Why would I ever bet with them again? I can tell you that I won't. This is called to me anti-customer service. You screw around with me, I'm out. There's plenty. I have 25 other choices in New Jersey. Thanks for nothing, large sock. See you down the road. Until next week, we are low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.